Ebenezer, welcome back, man.
Always great to be here. Yeah.
Always. I mean, it's your second time.
Yeah.
So we have to do a few more reps before I think I can accept the always.
Got it. Also, for now, once again, great to be here. There you go. Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed recently coming to Strength and Diversity that you invited me to at the Hearst Building in Manhattan, sick views, and I had no idea what the event was going to be. I had no idea what the cause was. And when I came, I was really impressed, and I was really, to say relieved would be, I think, actually an appropriate term.
Hmm.
And I'll share why, and then we can get into it. Strength and diversity, I'm immediately thinking, like, I understood that there was the idea of let's put a light on people who otherwise don't get a light on them. People from minority communities, people from places of disadvantageous upbringing, all that kind of stuff. And I love that. The thing I typically don't like about it is it oftentimes is a handout. It's oftentimes like, hey, here's a somewhat of an advantage, if you will, compared to other people in your position so that you can have a level playing field with everybody else. And then it doesn't get appreciated. It doesn't get worked for, and it doesn't get kept. It gets squandered too often. What I loved about what I saw at Strength and Diversity was it was about mentoring people who otherwise don't have the educational and the social influences of people around them who can show them what's possible and then allowing them to be great on their own. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, no, it's it is definitely one of the coolest projects I've been able to work on at Men's Health. Something also very different, I think, in the media publishing industry. Like the media publishing industry, I feel like, has over the last couple of years worked really hard, as has I feel like the entire country in many ways, to take a look at how they can I almost want to say do diversity, right? Mm-hmm. It became important a couple of years ago, I think, to everybody to think about. But I don't think anybody really, you know, for like when you think about like, you know, Coke or Pepsi, right? It's like doing diversity is, oh, we're going to put, you know, somebody of color in like an ad or something like that. And that's as far as anybody was able to make it, right? And I think the media publishing industry took a very, like, similar simplistic approach to that. Okay, we're just going to put somebody of color, you know, front and center, and that's diversity. I think what we've tried to do with Strength and Diversity is not just put people of color front and center, right? But what we're trying to do is create opportunities for them that they can then seize and take any direction that they want, right? And I'll tell you kind of the basic outline of the program, even beyond the event. What we try and work really hard to do is basically, one, level the playing field, but then two, level the playing field and give them opportunities to do really interesting things. So we do that with a lot of things that you kind of got a taste of at the event. We do that with mentorship. So what we do is we take 8 to 10 trainers every single year. And we will pair them up with really, really smart trainers and we work really hard on this part too. It's really tough to get it right, but we'll pair them up with, you know, smart trainers who have something in common with them, who can share some common experience, common goals, common things that they've been through, common like training approaches, right? And tell those trainers how to then leverage that to leverage, you know, say, a love of kettlebells into a business, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's really important for us to not just give the trainers opportunity, but help them build their businesses. Because, you know, I can put them in the magazine. If they don't realize what to do with the fact that they were present in the magazine once or twice, because that's, you know, we have a lot of people to get in. Mm-hmm. So that's, to some extent, that's the only outfacing opportunity I can give you, right? But you have to understand as a trainer then, how to leverage that to build your brand independently. And we want to teach you that before we just put you in the magazine, right?
Well, when you talk about monetizing kettlebells, I immediately think of DJ.
Yeah.
Who was sitting right next to me at the event.
Yeah.
And taking everything in. So I don't know how old he is, maybe 30?
30-ish, yeah.
So 30-ish. And I think he's married or he's close to being married. I don't know.
Married, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And he was talking about, like, you know, I do want to have kids. I don't know when. Figuring out this business thing. It's going pretty well. And he's a guy, pulled out his notepad, was taking notes about everything. Julian Barnes is up on the stage. He talks about the two books he wants everyone in the room to read, Profit First and The E-Myth. And DJ turns to me and he goes, those good books? I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, take the advice from the guy who's on the stage talking to you about it. And then I saw him recently at Belfast. I think that was in Texas.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. I saw that he was there. Another friend of mine, Tom DeGooley, who's been on the show twice, was also there, one of the instructors. So I was like, hey, you guys need to connect. And apparently they'd already connected on site. But that's, where do you find a guy like a DJ? How do you find your eight people you're going to work with a year?
Well, one quick pause before I get into that. Sure. I just want to say the fact that you and DJ had that interaction, right? Mm-hmm. And you also kind of, and you remembered him and can basically recount all those details is one, props to whatever you're doing for your memory. But also,
thanks.
But also that was, I think, the goal of the event too, right? We want to put these guys, again, not just front and center in the pages of our magazine, but we want to help create relationships with these trainers, help them build relationships in your relationship that hopefully DJ can learn from you a little bit more. And hopefully, you know, maybe one day he's on this podcast too, right?
Sure.
So we're trying to make those connections for guys. And so it's, you know, to me, just like, it's awesome that you were able to kind of make that hopefully a lasting connection, you know, and that he was able to make an impression on you and you on him.
Well, I think that's the key thing there. There were a lot of people there. I met a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't remember all of them the way I remember him.
Yeah.
Because of how intentional I could tell he was. Mm. It's not a knock on anybody else. It's a spotlight on him.
Yeah.
And he was, his phone was never out. Mm-hmm. Right. He was tapped into what was going on. He was asking questions of people as they walked around, asking good questions of me. And then we stayed in contact afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I see what he's doing. And I'm like, this is good, man. This is really good stuff. And so he's easy to remember because of that. And it speaks to what you're describing. Just because you get a meeting, you get put in the pages of Men's Health, doesn't mean people are going to remember you. It's about what you do with it. And he's doing a really good job with it.
Yeah. The whole goal is strength and diversity and leverage opportunity, right? And to your initial question, though, in terms of how we kind of get our trainers, and that's a process that's actually, one, it's ongoing year-round. But two, it's going on right now, especially we're actually looking for applications for our, what year is it? God, I'm so bad with that. 2024, class. We're looking for applications right now. So I believe if you do a search for like menshealth.com, strength and diversity, first link you get, it should be the application. Right. Okay. But that is kind of the heart of what we do. Like we look for, we have kind of an application that's kind of always on, just a Google form that anybody can go fill out. We worked to keep that as simple and accessible as possible. So it's basically like, you know, basic demographic information, name, age, your social. Everybody's got to have a social these days. And then you get your choice between, I believe it's like a 4-minute video where you can tell us why or what you want to get out of strength and diversity. Or you can write this like 1,000-word essay. That way, you know, those who are not super camera savvy don't have to dive into that world. Those who can't stand writing have an alternative. Once you fill that out, what we do, and we work really hard to, I'll tell you a little bit more about how we kind of aim for the applications after this, but we work really hard to, usually we wind up with like 60 to 70 people, and I'll cut that list down to 20. And then I'll take those 20 kind of the most elite applications that we have, and we put that in front of a pool of, like, I believe diversity is best at selecting diversity, right? So we have a pool of diverse individuals who then essentially rank and vote for the top 10, and from there we kind of wind up with our pool of 8 to 10 trainers. Go ahead.
How do you define diversity? Because when I hear this, what I'm hearing is white guys don't need to apply. When I think about it, I'm like, I know people who come from very difficult backgrounds, who look like me, who could use this too. And I don't know how, like, to me, diversity has always been all of it. And that's what makes it diversity. Like, if we had a group of all white people, that would clearly not be diverse. If we had a group of all black people, that also wouldn't be diverse. That would be black people. So how do you guys decide what diversity is? Let's start there.
Yeah, and again, that's a really good and sometimes it's a loaded question, right? Mm-hmm. And again, that's why I basically punt and I don't, right? I don't define diversity. Okay. I think one, and this is kind of like a very broad overarching answer. I think you know diversity when you see it, right? When you kind of see like a group of different individuals, mm-hmm. you know, for a variety, and I think in fitness especially it's very different, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are kind of, you know, obviously color is important, or you know, like having like, you know, diversity of race, there's diversity of gender, right? Mm-hmm. Diversity of you know, but even like body type, right? Age, right? All of these things, I think, especially in training, like we've been doing this for, I believe, 4 years now, and we've had a couple over 50 trainers, you mm-hmm. know, and that, you know, that is a group. I think what we're looking for is groups that are kind of marginalized in the fitness conversation, you know, mm-hmm. and that is the older trainer who's never done it, right?
Yep.
I believe we've had the last three years since the pandemic. Well, we started this in the pandemic, but coming out of the pandemic, one interesting thing that I saw in the applications was a lot of older trainers. And I think what happened as we kind of looked at the applications, learned about some of the participants, is a lot of older people, you know, around the pandemic realized fitness was important, wanted to share the fact that they discovered that, right? And mm-hmm. again, those aren't people who are going to be the first choice at Equinox. So that I think any group that is marginalized, that is the group that we are aiming to elevate and assist, right? But the other thing, again, and that's where I punt, is I don't think I should select diversity, right? So what we did is we kind of built a team of diverse individuals, right? And that includes, you know, the heads of the NCA, right?
The guys who were in the room?
What did you say?
The guys who were in the room when I was there?
Yes, the guys okay. who were at the presentation, yeah. So they help us select, right? Obviously, I am, you know, my mom is Chinese and my dad's Indian, so I have kind of a vote, if you will. I don't mm-hmm. have anything more than that, right? Right. You know, Amanda Lucci is she's kind of my partner in crime and the person who assists me the most from Women's Health. We work very closely together.
The blonde lady?
Yes. Okay. Very much. She was very much trying to stay behind it. She's probably going to hate that I'm bringing her up in this podcast, but, she was very much trying to stay behind the scenes, mm-hmm. at the event. I was doing everything I could to pull her not behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But you know, she is, a female. So she brings an interesting perspective, you know, a couple other trainers who you may be familiar with, Charlie Atkins. So she's a female trainer, I believe, of Filipino descent. I hope I'm not messing that up. You know, she has a vote. Milo Bryant, you know, a trainer out in San Diego who's been through a lot. He actually came up in writing, African-American, really amazing in that, like, he started as a writer. And I think about 10 years ago, pivoted to training. He's older, so he brings an interesting perspective. All these people, and then some, right? All of them help us choose the class, and mm-hmm. therefore, I'm never defining diversity, and I can't answer that. I think it's, again, a really loaded question. But the combination of the presences who we put together, white, black, Asian, you know, LGBTQ, older, younger, right? Larger body types, you know, more classic body types, all of that helps us figure out the right mix of trainers, and helps us figure out that mix of diversity.
Well, I think now what you said, diversity sees diversity, or diversity defines diversity, mm-hmm. makes sense. Because yep. what you're describing is it takes a group of people to create a group of people, and that initial group of people has to be representative of a bunch of different kind of people.
Yes.
So that's interesting. The program itself, I'm surprised you're only getting 60, 70 applications. It seems like something that thousands of people should be applying for. What? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What is the promise that people perceive they're going to be getting as a result of applying for this if they're to be awarded?
The promise is, again, I think the promise is, again, threefold. There are three tangible pieces that we give you. One is the mentorship, right? Mm-hmm. Two, and I think this was huge for me coming up in training. I think I told the story a little bit that day. I started out, and I have like a degree in accounting, which I yep. never had any intention of using. I literally went to college, undergrad, to play basketball and lift weights and throw a javelin, right?
Okay. Where'd you go?
I went to a small school in Virginia for a little bit called okay. Eastern Mennonite University, and then I wound up at Syracuse, right? Okay. where was I going with that? Oh, yeah, in terms of, so the big piece for me was, I remember getting out of school, and I loved fitness and all that kind of stuff. Poor kid out of college, also in journalism, not that, that even made it worse. So poorer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, I know a lot about training, know a lot about fitness, want to learn about it. So it would probably be really great if I get certified, right? At the time, out of college, $500, $1,000 for, you know, an NSCA cert or like a NASM was not something I had lying around, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't get it for a while, and I went into my profession, and I circled back to training years later, right? So we cover the certification, right? Like, we work with the NCA on that. The trainers either get their choice of a CSCS or a CPT, or their, any of the other specialized certs are also accessible to them, although we try to push them to that main, to one of those main two. So they get that. And then they get, we have a series of, I believe, 2 to 3 months of Zoom clinics with them where we, one, introduce them to other really, really smart people. So we'll introduce them to, you know, the heads of Precision Nutrition. They wind up getting the access to the Precision Nutrition certification on top of that, right? We'll introduce them to guys like Julian Barnes who can help them figure out their businesses. We will, Amanda and I are very, very good at social media, or at least I like to think I'm good at social media.
So 300,000 people agree with you?
Three. Yeah, was it, you said three, right?
I said a few hundred, yeah.
Okay, 300,000 to me. No, but, but, you know, we give them a clinic on, you know, I think there's, there are a couple ways to do social media. You can, you know, you can do it so you can pick up followers. You can do it so you can be kind of a very strong fitness presence. And we help them find that line, right? Mm-hmm. We go, that's about a 2-hour clinic. So we're giving them one of those once a week. One, that way we can get to know them and their goals, right? And then two, so that obviously we can help educate them. And just we're basically doing everything we can to make them the trainers. You know, I have very specific things I look for in trainers at Men's Health. Amanda and Jacqueline Andriakos, who is the women's health and fitness director, have very specific things they're looking for in trainers from Women's Health. We're basically giving them the inside playbook and then teaching them everything in the playbook over the course of those 2 to 3 months of Zoom clinics, right? Mm-hmm. And then the final piece is, and I think this hopefully is the big sell for people. I mean, I think it's all a great sell, but suddenly you have instant access. You're kind of behind the door. You've made that connection with Men's Health or Women's Health, and we're going to go to you, right? The next time I need a kettlebell trainer, once DJ has taken care of his certification, he's the first guy I'm going to go to because mm-hmm. I've worked with him. He understands little things that we've taught him that globally some trainers don't get about how to give a good quote, right? Mm-hmm. How to sneak in the piece of your business without making it all about your business, right? He understands those pieces because he came up through the program. So I can hand him to our writers, our editors, and they can work with him on stories much more easily than somebody who hasn't come up through the program. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, to me, the big sell is, I think, the mentorship, the fact that we're paying for certifications for you, right? And just the fact that you then have so much more opportunity on the Men's Health and Women's Health platform. And you don't have that opportunity just because, like, you went through the program, right? You have that opportunity because you're just more media savvy than so many of the other trainers out there. So that's kind of, that to me is like the big sell we're trying to give people.
When you're looking at the people who are coming through, are you guys assessing who you believe is likely to be successful along with in need? And the reason I'm asking that is I can see a lot of people who would be in need saying, I want to do this. That sounds amazing. I want to learn how to do that stuff. And they're just lacking something. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time. Maybe it's a different social dynamic that they need to be surrounded by before it's going to make sense. Mm-hmm. But there's something that's not there where they're unlikely to be able to apply what they're learning. Is that something you guys take into consideration or not really?
Really hard question. Again, I'll punt to the committee that makes the choice on these.
Okay.
But I'll now say one other thing. But yeah, I think again, it comes down to that. That's all a part of, to me, diversity, right? Mm-hmm. Some people like DJ are just instantly going to get it, yep. Right? Some people, you know, we've had, I believe, two trainers who, over the course of the 4 years in the program, we've had two trainers who we've had two trainers who, let me get water.
Yeah, go for it. Don't take your time. Hit that water. That's why we got it.
Yeah, I was trying to fight through that.
Why'd you take a sip of the water?
But over the course of the program, we've had two trainers who spent time in prison and came to us, and definitely just objectively based on kind of
they were sitting to my left.
I believe so. Yeah, yeah. Joe and Jay, yep. Both of whom are two of my favorite guys who have ever come up through the program, and also two of like the most well-meaning guys, mm-hmm. you know. And again, like objectively, they may not be as traditionally qualified as a DJ Gibson. But at the same time, I put them within the 20 who were submitted to the larger committee, and then the larger committee chose them, right? I can speak to why I put them in the 20 that I, and the reason I put them in the 20 is because I believe, both from kind of personal experience, what I've learned through the people who gave me chances, and from watching way too much TV, I believe that everybody deserves a shot, right? And sometimes, like, you can have that, you know, sometimes you can have that person who may not seem qualified, right? Or, you know, may not have everything on their resume. And all they need is, like, a shot to shine, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, we try to give those people opportunities. And I think, again, it speaks to what the committee looked at, right? The fact that both Jay and Joe wound up in the program and have done incredibly well. You know, I believe Joe trains people on both coasts in California and New York, right? Mm-hmm. That's and it's flying back and forth all the time. That's one, that is hustle, and two, that is leveraging your opportunity, yeah. You know. Jay has trained Jay, I believe when I met him and he was coming up in the program, he lived in Ohio. He wound up moving to Atlanta, where he has trained, I think, two boxing champions, mm-hmm. and Kevin Ollie, I believe, former UConn basketball coach.
I think someone from the Lions, too, Detroit Lions, if I remember correctly.
Think so, yeah. But so they took the opportunity. And one of the things, too, is I think it's like, again, men's health, being part of men's health and women's health is amazing, right? But it's what you do with that. Mm-hmm. That matters and that makes your career as a trainer, because we're not going to pay you the bajillion dollars. You're going to go make the bajillion dollars yourself. Mm-hmm. And those are two guys who have been in the pages of Men's Health, been on our website. But despite the fact that, again, they may not seem as outwardly, you know, on paper qualified as a DJ Gibson to be successful, they found their version of success. I would like to think we helped them there. Mostly, I'm going to say they just busted their asses and found their version of success, and we play a small part in that.
I think even if the small part is just being an anchor.
Yes.
You know, like, there's something you're accountable to. These people are going to check in on me. I won a prestigious spot that someone else wanted. I'm going to make the most of this. Even if that's all that it was, which it surely wasn't only that. That's a lot. You mentioned earlier that you are of Indian and Chinese descent and that you went to Syracuse for journalism. I imagine, and then you came out and you were like, I'm gonna be a trainer. I imagine that's not what Indian and Chinese parents were looking for when they sent their kids to school.
Yeah, which is, and again, I think I told a little bit of this story, obviously the ultra tight version at mm-hmm. the open of the event. Yeah, it's definitely not what my parents wanted. So, and I've actually written about this a little bit too. We did a really cool story, cover story on, and he has a very similar story. The actor Simu Liu.
I don't know who that is.
So he was in Shang-Chi, the Marvel. You need to watch Marvel movies. I feel like this came up last time we did this too.
Yeah, it might have.
Yeah. We'll fix this at some point. Okay. I'm gonna send you a new video. I'm gonna send you a movie list. Okay. But okay.
Jay Ferrugia sent me a rap music list. I'll take a movie list from you.
Now there will be homework for appearance theory. There will be no appearance theory.
Listen, Jay keeps telling me that we need to do a duet where we rap I Go to Work, which is a Kool Moe Dee song. I don't know if you ever heard it before or not. But there's a lot of words and he doesn't repeat them. And my daughter is actually, I find my 9-year-old in her room because I told her my friend wants me to do this with him. And she's like, I'm going to learn it before you. So she's in her room listening to Kool Moe Dee, learning the verses.
Yeah.
So I've got the homework. I'm I'll do it.
Okay, more homework coming after this. But the quick version is Simu Liu is the actor who played Shang-Chi in the Marvel movie. Well, he played Shang-Chi in the movie Shang-Chi. Mm-hmm. He was on the cover of Men's Health, I believe, 3 years ago. Second cover story I ever did. Also, like, a blast of a cover interview. He and I talked for 8 hours. Which is a lot for a cover interview, because we had a lot of common experience, right? And it's kind of a very common thing, I think, in Asian families, especially first generation or kind of in that stage. your parents are really well-intentioned, right? And they want you to do well. So they push you, and this is what my parents did. They pushed me in the direction of professions that were safe and kind of data driven, right? Like an accountant, one is going to make, and you think about some of the Asian stereotypes out there, it's like accountant, doctor, right? Mm-hmm. Piano, these are all relatively, one, there's a lot of money in them, and two, concert piano, man.
Okay.
I can play. I have some game. I don't have that kind of game. Mm-hmm. But they're like, they're professions where you can make a lot of money, and they're also professions that are driven less by the opinions and whims of others, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a good doctor who can perform heart surgery, you're a good doctor who can perform heart surgery, right? Okay? Versus kind of more creative professions, right? Which is, you know, being an actor in Lou's case, right? In my case, being a writer, right? You can't always quantify a good story. You kind of know it, right? And that's what editors will tell you. You kind of know a good story, but you can't always quantify what makes good writing, you know? You can't always quantify what makes, you know, a great aside from ratings, right? But at the initial, right, you can't quantify necessarily what makes like a great creative TV show. So they generally, in my experience, what I've heard from other Asians, is my parents were trying to push me away from things that they didn't deem as safe professions, right? Mm-hmm. So I did very well on standardized testing in my math stuff, right? I'm very good with numbers. So they're like, you're going to be an accountant, right? again, mean it, like, very well.
Jewish,
mean
it. Man. It's no different. No piano for us, but no different.
Yeah, but that's what they were trying to do, right? And me being also the first son, trying to be like the good son, right? Because I think my brother actually is an accountant, so he was the best son. Mm-hmm. But my sister was a little bit more resistant than me in terms of kind of trying to find her own way, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, my parents pushed me into those professions. I tried it. Didn't like it because all I ever really wanted to do was lift weights, and it took me a while to kind of find the right pivot. So the reason I went into media, actually, after the accounting thing, I got my degree. I was like, I hate this, never want to do it. So I wound up working construction for a couple months.
Okay.
Theory behind working construction is actually funny because I was like, if I lift really heavy things, I'll get really strong. Mm-hmm. Except it wore me out, so it wasn't any fun. Did that, worked at a video game store very briefly, and then went back to school for the 1 year intensive journalism program. The idea behind the journalism program is if I can get to like Sports Illustrated or ESPN, Sports Illustrated at the time existed,
right.
You know, ESPN, something like that. I'm around athletes. All I really want to do is kind of pick their brains on fitness, and I can just pick their brains on fitness a lot more. It is interesting. I'll go home to visit my mother now, right? Who I love, right? But it took her a while to kind of still wrap her. I think she still hasn't wrapped her mind around. So you're a trainer and a fitness director. What the heck is that? And what's an influencer? You know, mm-hmm. I don't think she understands those things. Where my brother's job, again, just because, you know, of what she's used to and what she understands, makes a lot more instant sense to her.
Sure.
It's like my brother is, you know, a financial analyst.
When you can say I am A or yep. I am N. And you don't have to follow it up with, but not the kind that you're used to. It's easy for a parent to describe what their kid does.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm curious about, I didn't obviously grow up in an obviously minority culture. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nobody knows I'm Jewish unless I tell them I'm Jewish. I don't wear a yarmulke around. If they look at me from the side, maybe. Mm-hmm. But there's what I'm curious to is, they don't want you doing, your parents don't want you doing the subjective artistic things. Mm. And I wonder if that's because somewhere in them, they know that that depends on somebody else believing that you do a good job.
Bingo.
And there being a level of you're of Asian and Indian descent. So even if you do a good job, they're not going to choose you for it over the other person who looks more like them who also does a good job. Do you think that plays a role in it?
Exactly. And that's exactly, I think that's exactly what it is, right?
Interesting.
And I think if, I could not say it any better than you, right? But I can give you, I think that's a lot of the conversation around diversity and race that we've had, I think in this country and just globally, has always been about, do you see people who look like you in that profession, mm-hmm. right? I think it's hard a little, I think that's a tough conversation sometimes because then we start to get, like some people over, percentage it, if yeah. you will. It's like, oh, there are X amount of people of this color in the population. There are X amount of Asian people in the pop, or there's TK percentage of Asian people in the population. And therefore there should be that percentage of Asian people in every single TV show, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that works, right? But I can say even just from kind of personal experience too, when I was coming up, like I loved the game of basketball, right? I was growing up before Jeremy Lin did the whole thing where he torched everyone.
47 points at the Garden one night or something?
Something like that. Yeah. Didn't he like crush the Lakers too? All teams?
Maybe. Yeah. I was still a basketball fan back then, so I should remember, but I don't.
But I can't. So growing up, like you step onto a basketball court. And again, I don't think kids necessarily mean it that way, but you know, I would have probably spent more time and taken basketball more seriously if I had seen Jeremy Lin mm-hmm. before, right? So I think it's the idea that like when you see somebody do it, that does matter. And that matters to your parents or my parents in that situation too, right? Because if they saw a bunch of Asian creatives, and again, I think that's now changing and rising, right? If they saw a bunch of Asian creatives in those industries thriving, right? Then it's like, okay, well, you want to go write stuff? Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they didn't see that. All they saw were every time, like literally the first like five pediatricians I had, I went through them because I got sick a lot. Mm-hmm. The first five pediatricians I had were Asian. So also that to my parents is like, well, Asians go on to be doctors and they make a lot of money. So that's, you know, so he's going to do the same thing, mm-hmm. right?
The first time that light bulb went off for me, I was watching something with my daughter and she's like, ooh, that's a girl. I was like, oh shit. Hmm. It does matter to her that she sees somebody like that. And
I was going to say one other thing too. Yeah, yeah. I think too, like to the data driven group, mm-hmm. it increasingly matters too, right? If
sure.
If that Shang-Chi movie wound up doing very well for Marvel, right? But if it doesn't do well, then all of a sudden they're not going to, you know, they're going to look at that data and they're going to say, well, an Asian man. And again, there's a lot of conflation happening in those situations.
Right, end of one.
Yeah. What do you say?
The N of one.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't work with an Asian lead. So we can't go back to that. Right. Right. Yeah. So I think that's why I think not for nothing, us looking beyond the resume when we work to select for strength and diversity is so important because some people, some cultures just need a shot in different mm-hmm. roles.
Well, Bruce Lee faced that. And have you watched the show Warrior?
I have not. No, it's on my list. What's that? It's on my list.
Well, it's not a Marvel show, but Bruce Lee wrote it back when he was still Bruce Lee and he pitched it and nobody would run with it because it was about Asians. Asians were the leads. Asians were the heroes, and nobody would run with it when it was still in his time. Hmm. And only now has it come out. It's a great show. It's a really great show. Highly recommend it to anybody who enjoys martial arts and, you know, history. It's cool. But that's what you're talking about. They don't think anyone's going to want to see it, so they don't produce it, so it doesn't get out there. So the next person who has the thing doesn't come forward with the thing. And that's one of the reasons we remember somebody like a Bruce Lee is because he was so against the grain, right? When does something like that end up becoming, okay, we've gone too far? In other words, like the Marvel movie with the five women mm-hmm. that didn't do well. I don't know if that's a good example of we've gone too far. I think what I'm talking about is if we try to put people of diverse backgrounds in lead roles and all kinds of stuff. And I'm just talking about movies now. I'm talking about as the trainers in men's health, as writers, as all the things, commentators. Does that, when is that become, okay, we're no longer reaching the audience that we also need to reach because we're just trying to put somebody in who looks a certain way?
It's a really, really hard, hard question. You're asking all the hard ones.
Well, this is a topic that I find super interesting because I look at the NFL and they have something called the Rooney Rule. You familiar with the Rooney Rule?
Very, yeah.
So for people who don't know, it means, and I might be even a little bit off on it, but they have to interview, I believe, at least one person of color for every five people that they interview, and every job that they put out, they have to interview a person of color. And when I first heard that, I was like, oh, so they're going to do somebody the courtesy of wasting their time in an interview. That was what I first thought. Then I learned that Mike Tomlin only got his job as a result of the Rooney Rule. Mike Tomlin is one of the most successful coaches in NFL history. He should go to the Hall of Fame. He coaches the Steelers. He's never had a losing season, if I'm correct on that. And he wouldn't have gotten the interview if it weren't for the Rooney Rule. And so there's some merit there. And I just run into this as an employer at our company. We have a lot of diversity, just not on the color of people's skin. I was looking at our screen the other day, talking to our chief strategy officer about it. And we're like, wow, we don't have a lot of diversity on our team. And I thought about it for a second. Like, well, we do, though. We have women. We have men. We have young. We have old. We have people who live in the East Coast, people who live in the Midwest, people who live abroad, people who come from poverty, people who come from money. We have Jewish people. We have Catholic people. We have Muslim people. We have we have people from all different walks of life. We, you know, different sexual orientations. We just don't have anybody of color anymore on our team. And I often think about if I went out and I was like, hey, we want to hire a person of color next. I don't think that's a good way for me to hire.
You're asking all the tough ones today. I think it definitely is challenging. I got to think about how to answer this.
Sure.
You got to stick with me. I may have to talk my way through this one.
I'm okay with it. I'm asking the hard questions because when we run a program like Strength and Diversity that I support, and like I told you before we started, I want to support even more this year. I want to be able to bring up all of the things that somebody who would say, that's a foolish endeavor. There's no reason to do that. The cream will rise. I want that person to be able to have heard all of the things that they're thinking along the way so that we can flush out any objection, misunderstanding, lack of knowledge, any of that.
Yeah, I think the Rooney Rule is actually a really good example, right? Because the Rooney Rule does not, and again, like you said, Mike Tomlin is an example. It came up through the Rooney Rule. If not for that, he doesn't get a shot. And I think I think fundamentally what we're trying to do with Strength and Diversity and what most diversity programs try to do, right, is create a shot for the people who, for a variety of reasons, whether it's the stereotypes associated with them, the finances that may come with their, the finances that are often attached to their, the financial challenges that are often attached to their particular marginalized community, the areas that they come from, right, the fact that people judge them. What we're trying to do with any diversity program is just give those people the shot, right? And then they can do with it, you know, whatever they will before whatever decision makers, before the decision makers that they have to, right? And I think it is about, I think all diversity programs are about creating that shot, right? I think the thing that we in leadership have to do sometimes is be willing to recognize that the shot is not just necessarily the opportunity or is not just the interview, right? But it sometimes is taking a chance. Okay. Greatness comes from taking a chance. Greatness comes from letting, an 18-year-old Kobe Bryant. Okay. Again, different situation, but marginalized community, if you will, or young NBA player who nobody's going to give the game winning shot to. Right. And he airballs it twice, right? Mm-hmm. I believe like his rookie year, his second year in the playoffs, right? And he only goes on to be one of the greatest basketball players ever, right? Greatness comes because a coach, right, was willing to buck the trends, right, and give that young player a shot to do something, okay? And it worked out well. And I think what we have to recognize as the decision makers, and I would challenge you from a corporate a perspective of your company too, is and I'm going to challenge you first, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit of how we do it at Men's Health too. But
just so we're clear, I'm wide open to the challenge.
Yeah,
I want to hear how you do it because one of the reasons we don't have people of color on our team is people of color aren't applying to be on our team.
It takes and I think that dynamic is always interesting too, right? Because again, if you look at kind of how I came up, right? I would never apply to the young version of me out of school, out of accounting and journalism school. Maybe I would like to think I'm bright enough and brilliant enough to be a part of active life today, right? But that was never going to happen for 22-year-old me because I didn't see anybody who looked like me, et cetera. So I was never going to show up. I was never going to apply to active life, right? But I think one of the challenges for you is kind of recognizing that, you know, the shot goes beyond just like the moment of like getting the application in or interviewing the guy, right? Mm-hmm. The shot goes with, and again, I know there is some potential cost to some companies, so that's where it gets a little tricky, and that's where sometimes people are leery to take, or people are not crazy about taking the risk, right? But the shot comes with actually bringing somebody on board, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say DJ Gibson, right, who you love, you know? It's like maybe...
Who, by the way, I tried to recruit.
it's funny because I was actually going to suggest something like that, right? Yeah. Or maybe it's Joe or Jay. Go ahead.
I want you to finish. Mm-hmm. But I tried to recruit him because he's great.
Yes.
It didn't matter what color his skin was to me. I was like, we need somebody with this charisma, this skill set, and this mindset to be able to come work with us in our business. Mm-hmm. I asked him straight up. It's not for him, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But the color of his skin didn't cross my mind as a reason why I would make the offer to him.
True. I was going to say, I think, so DJ is an easy choice, right? I think choosing somebody who maybe isn't DJ, but maybe did come one. I also think long-term that's where, you and I can work better together with me, like feeding you some talent from Strength and Diversity. Cause that I think is the next evolution of Strength and Diversity is like, we're creating opportunities for these guys in the, like, with Men's Health and Women's Health, which again, hopefully has value to the brands they go on to work with, the companies they work with, their clients, right? But it's like, how can we more directly help these people who come up through the program get the long-term jobs or land with great companies like Active Life, right? But just to kind of close the loop on what saying, I think, you know, the interesting challenge for you from a almost like a thought perspective as you look to fill another slot is maybe you do intentionally bring on somebody of color, take a chance, right? On an Asian trainer who maybe doesn't necessarily have the classic qualifications you might look for, right? Who isn't DJ, right? Or a black trainer who is similar, or a Latin trainer who is similar. And maybe you do go out and bring in that person, right? And maybe they only last like in the ideal scenario, right? That person then works for you for like 5 years, right?
Sure,
and that's longer. A success, or that's the traditional version of success, right? But maybe that person stays on for like only 2 months because they're not a fit. They're not your Mike Tomlin, right? But one, like other people you've then opened yourself to, like, let's say that person is Asian. Let's just stick with that because let's say you've opened yourself to other Asians, then looking at it and being like, well, they hired an Asian before, so that could have been me, right? And I think that is an underrated impact that you then have, right? And two, then the next four Asians then apply because you took a chance on one, right? Who maybe worked out or maybe didn't, right? And four Asians then come along, and maybe that's where you get your Mike Tomlin.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you'll get no pushback from me on that. The hard thing for me to be able to make something like that happen is there's a few levels, and I'm I'm not suggesting they're insurmountable. I'm saying them out loud because I want to hear your thoughts. Mm-hmm. One is, at one point, there were three people working at Active Life who were all three black people working at Active Life. Mm-hmm. One of them, unfortunately, her mom got sick and she had to go take care of that. Mm-hmm. Another one, frankly, he was great. And he found that he was much more passionate about working with kids and with athletes. Mm-hmm. So he went and partnered on another business here in town that I now mentor. And so that's
a win, by the way.
Oh, it's a huge win.
Yes.
Huge win. He's a great guy. Justin, for anybody listening, great guy. He's going to be successful. He's a stud. He was an obvious one. And the third one just didn't pan out. But nobody, unless if these people, the second obstacle for me is, unless if the person we're talking about is also camera savvy, no one knows I hired them. And so how does somebody find out that we have all these people working at the company and decide I can apply there?
Again, it would help this to answer this one. I almost have to know a little bit more about the pieces you have to play with.
Sure.
Right. I think at a base level though, it is like you were able to, at the start of this conversation, ID the fact that that right now you don't have anyone of color. How were you able to do that? Cause I guess like you have like a website with a bunch of headshots.
Right? I know. I pull the whole team into a meeting every Wednesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I can see everyone's face. And there's nobody's face who has dark skin.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think
or Asian.
I think it's interesting in your particular situation, just because I know you do a ton of, like, you do stuff like this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. You do a ton of content. And it's interesting because I think this is also, in the long term, as kind of, one, I feel like fundamentally as a nation, and this goes beyond just, like, fitness,
sure,
we've come so far in terms of diversity. I think sometimes just within the whole national narrative, we forget to give ourselves credit for that, right? Mm-hmm. To the back end of that, we still have a long way to go, right? And I think the next step for it, and again, this is just me theorizing, not holding you to anything, but giving you some ideas. I think one of the next steps is, and I've even thought of this kind of in terms of like my ascent kind of at Men's Health, right? One of the next steps and one of the challenges is leadership, right? Sometimes stepping aside that to create opportunities for then that diversity to be showcased, right? Mm-hmm. Which I would contend the Strength and Diversity event is a really, really good example of, right? The fact that, there was an opportunity there for kind of even Rich Dorman, the editor-in-chief, how he kind of set me up to then be able to address everybody at the open, right? Mm-hmm. I think it is sometimes about leadership stepping aside, right? To create opportunities because there are visible moments for Active Life, right? That you can create, right? So you make a lot of content, right? Mm-hmm. Can you now use your platform? And again, I think at Men's Health, this is kind of essentially what we're trying to do, right? It's like, let's use the Men's Health, the women's health platforms that we've created, right? To give diversity that chance to be a little bit more front and center. Can you use the platform you've created with both, your social account, which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
And with this podcast, right? It's maybe every third podcast, let's say you got like a brilliant Asian trainer who is super great on camera, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe every third podcast, instead of you hosting it, right? That Asian trainer does, right? Which is sometimes hard because I think we all, on some level, like societally, we all gravitate towards our moment in the spotlight. But handing that spotlight
to somebody else is an attractive thing to me. Being able to actually, look, the reason I love this podcast is because of the relationships I get to build. Right? Mm-hmm. You and I first connected because I spoke at the Kabuki Strength Week last year.
Yeah.
And you saw it. If I hadn't have been able to put together, Ebenezer is also friends with Don. Mm. We have a commonality there and want to continue to build a relationship. And I'm not saying it was all me and you had nothing to do with it. Mm. But if it wasn't for that event, we do that, we get to know each other. If I don't have a podcast, the next time we speak might be never. It could be like just in the Instagram DM, right?
Yeah.
But getting to hang out in person, do the recording that we did last time, doing this again, meeting at Strength and Diversity last time when you did it, those are all opportunities to build a relationship that go far beyond an Instagram DM.
Yes.
Right. And so that's why I like the podcast, but I don't have to be the host to do that.
Right.
So I would be more than happy to have somebody run the interviews. Yeah. And when there's somebody who I'm genuinely interested in asking very specific questions of, I do it. I don't know where I would start to find that person. So when Justin was with the company, and again, Justin's the one who left to be a partner in a business in town who I still have a great relationship with. He was running our local podcast. We had a podcast called Long Beach Locals. We still have it. The idea was to interview other local business owners. He was in all of the content. Part of me is curious if it's just that we haven't been around long enough and we haven't had enough exposures of people seeing people other than me on camera or Larry on camera that lead to believing or to recognizing, like, the reticular activating system. Oh, there's somebody there who doesn't look like everybody else there. Mm-hmm. Part of me wonders that. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think again, that's where it's hard to get that person in to start with. This is where I think you have a ton of power from within your company, right?
I'm a dictator. I don't lead as one, but technically, at the end of the day,
dictator.
I can be if I want to be.
Yeah. but I think it's sometimes, and again, that's where I think we, like, societally have to be intentional about diversity, which is really what we've obviously tried to craft with Strength and Diversity, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just like, hey, let's, you know, I think, and I don't think this is a bad thing. It's just kind of assessing the differences of where things are. I think you almost have to, like, when we wanted to, there are two ways to do diversity, obviously, like we talked about in media. One is the basic, okay, we need to do diversity. Let's just get diverse people on camera and we're covered, right? And I would contend, and I don't mean this in a negative way or to take a shot, like, you're probably a little bit closer to that version right now, right? Mm-hmm. What we did with Strength and Diversity is we tried to intentionally put a whole ton of infrastructure in place, right? In terms of education, certification, mentorship, clinics, right? That way this is also why diversity is so hard, right? Because it's not, you know, the check a box version of it is very quick. And the thinking about the infrastructure is something a lot of people almost don't have time to do, because we're all fighting, you know. I could give a whole different podcast on, like, socioeconomic. But, you know, we put a lot of infrastructure in place, right, to make it work. And I think what you might need, or what might be interesting to think about, is how can you maybe put some infrastructure in place that can make it a little more possible and easy, right? Or make it a little bit more natural for talent to show up, right? Like, maybe
what's an example of that? I think you were close, and I to push back a little bit.
Totally.
I'm not focused on finding diversity.
Yes.
And that's why we don't have it. I'm focused on finding the best people who step forward for an opportunity in the company. What I recognize I could do a better job of and don't know how to do and haven't made a priority because, frankly, we're a young startup and we're scrappy and we're trying to get things going. And I'm not trying to save the world in terms of socioeconomic equality right now. What I don't know how to do is create the world in which more people who look differently start to apply. And so some of the things I've tried, to give you some perspective, is I've tried doing things like scholarship programs and going into neighborhoods where people couldn't otherwise afford to do this and bringing them forward and giving them a scholarship. $17,000.
Cool. Yeah.
Of education and mentorship from us to do the thing. And that's worked really, really well for some people, both in the United States and in third world countries, or second world, whatever the world's categorizations are. but there's a volume that we can do. There's a volume that we become hamstrung at. And what I recognize is that we are not a financially accessible program for people who would be coming from communities that do not have financial means. And so my only thought is that it's harder for people to come forward from those communities because they can't even see themselves as our client.
Yeah.
So how could they possibly see themselves as our team? And I'm curious your take on that.
I'm gonna give you three different pieces. I have a lot of thoughts on this, so sometimes I forget. So if I give you two, just remind me.
I'll just
more.
Say there's a third. I need a third. You're the yeah. accountant.
And now, yeah, but I failed accountant.
Okay.
Didn't say in it. Okay. So a couple things. I think one fundamentally, the biggest thing is just stand on the shoulders of greater men. Right. That's kind of always how I think of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of talked about some different, I think, simple cues. Right. One is the Rooney Rule, right? So the Rooney Rule, it's crazy because the Rooney Rule, for all the gobbledygook that the NFL likes to write about, is pretty simple. You just have to you can't hire somebody until you've interviewed somebody of color, mm-hmm. right? And that's just the rule, right? And if you were to put something in place like that, and this actually goes into my second point, right? If you were to put something in place like that, yes, your interview process is going to be harder. There's a little bit more friction. I would consider it positive friction, right? Mm-hmm. Your interview process is going to be harder, but you've put a system in because you're going to have to go find people of color to interview. And that process is actually not dissimilar to the challenges of strength and diversity. When we started this conversation, earlier at one point, you were like, I'm surprised more people don't apply, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell you why we only get 60 to 80 applications. And it's weird. I feel pretty happy getting 60 to 80.
I know. I'm saying.
Oh, totally.
If you're somebody out there.
Oh, totally.
This is, what are you waiting for?
Exactly. No, and I'm always like, I'm always amazed that we don't have more, right? Mm-hmm. But then I've realized a couple of things over my tenure just at Men's Health. Like even when, and this is not just at Men's Health, this is a crazy thing about, I think humans just don't like to have to fill out applications, right? Like when I was at New York Daily News, when I was at ESPN, the magazine, we would do giveaways. And I remember being a kid looking in like magazines and newspapers, and when they would do like a giveaway for, you know, a car or like basketball cards, like a full case of them. Mm-hmm. I would always assume like I have no shot at that, right? Because there are 8 million people applying, but so few people are willing to take the time to do the paperwork, right? And so that's something we encounter in strength and diversity too. So the other half of stand on the shoulders of greater men, right, is that we kind of track down people who we think would be good applicants too, right? And that's a lot of our pushes on social. Mm-hmm. So we're always pushing. I'm pushing the trainers from other classes. Like, I love DJ, right? So I'll shoot DJ a text probably after this, and I'll basically tell him, hey, can you know, any other trainers who you think are really good for strength and diversity, you came up through the program, you know who's awesome for it, right? Mm-hmm. So can you tell them to apply, right?
Well, tell him also,
yes,
we're going to be hiring again at Boom. Active Life in a month and a half, and he should reconsider, he should come take the job.
Boom, yeah. And, but it is crazy, right? Because it's for all the tools and levers we think we have to pull, right? Mm-hmm. Or we work to pull to kind of create opportunities and get these opportunities out in front of people, right? Sometimes it comes back to that basic thing of, yes, I'm a giant publication, right? And I'm still kind of using that word of mouth tool. And on some level, it's like that's the play is like you and I think as long as we're doing versions of what we're doing in this career, and the way we choose to do fitness, you and I will always have to actively recruit. Right. No matter
why is that? What is the way that we do? What is the way that we do it have to do with the fact that
I just mean the fact that you and I have, you know, obviously we both have to some extent like a vested interest in trying to create diversity and get
good.
Yeah. And because of that, I think we will always have to like actively recruit and actively encourage people to interview for X position at Active Life or, you know, join the strength and diversity program at Men's Health. Mm-hmm. No matter how large or small the organization, I think that's a key, right? So stand on the shoulders of greater men is, and in that version is, I think, like, that's what we have to do at Men's Health. So to some extent, you're just going to have to do that here, mm-hmm. right? I think the third underrated element of getting more diverse presences in, and again, this is treading into a little bit of, like, to me, like, socioeconomic stuff.
Wait, what
like,
was the first? I thought that, oh, did you just first was the two?
Yeah, I kind of combined
oh,
it.
Oh, so it was recruit?
Yeah.
And then it was...
It was recruit and mm-hmm. build it in a process. Like, you have to commit to, you're not going to hire your next slot, okay, mm-hmm. until you have, and again, obviously your criteria, right, until you have interviewed somebody of color,
right?
Right? And you just have to stick to that. And then you have to, and that's going to mean you're going to have to, you're going to get like five, you know, applicants from non-marginalized communities, right? And you're going to have to go out and find yourself a sixth, right? And if you commit to that, I think, you know, that then that's the start of it. The third piece, I think, and this is a little bit more complicated or challenging, I can tell you about the media industry, right? So there's a lot of complaints within the media industry, and this is, you know, newspapers, magazines, across just across the industry, there's a lot of complaints about a lack of diversity.
Really? Okay? Still?
Historically, yeah. This has been a problem pretty much ever since I broke into the business, right?
Okay.
It's not rocket science to figure out why. The media industry pays horribly, okay? That's also why another reason my parents, you know, weren't necessarily, one, they can't figure out what a journalist or an influencer is, right? Two, they didn't know what the salary range was, mm-hmm. right? Like a doctor, like all the doctors my parents knew had like really, really nice cars.
Right.
So it's like, okay, doctor, good profession. All the accountants and finance, you know, all the Wall Street people are, you know, are rolling in it, right? So my parents were trying to push me into more lucrative professions where I could, you know, it like I could have what, you know, what they thought would be an awesome life, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the, and again, like we don't have to necessarily go into this for your company, but one thing to think about, and I've also seen this within the media industry where like a company may want like a really, really awesome editor, right? They have an editor opening. They're like, well, why can't we get any people of color to fill that slot, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't we get one from a marginalized community? And I'm like, because, and then they're like, you know, we interviewed like, you know, an Asian person and a Black person or whatever, and they didn't want the job. I'm like, no, they wanted the job, okay? They didn't want to be paid like horribly mm-hmm. in this industry, and so they went elsewhere, right? So one thing to think about, and again, I don't think we have to get into it too deeply, is like the salary range. Like, mm-hmm. is there a way that maybe you can, you know, rejigger the position a little bit, right? Maybe, and again, I don't know, like
we outpace. Yeah. By a long shot, the mm-hmm. salaries. I mean, like we have, yeah. It's yeah. That's not the problem. That's not the problem.
That's good.
We recently were interviewing for a position at the flagship. Mm-hmm. I'll take you to see it after this if you have mm-hmm. time. And we did have one gentleman come through who I don't know if he was African American or Latin American. I don't know exactly what he was. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. I know he wasn't white. And he was somebody who another team member actually was like, this guy's great. We should bring him through. And he was the wrong candidate. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, he wants to get into a life of investing in real estate. And I want someone who wants to be in a life of okay. serving other people yeah. in our business. But so we had this time, it worked out that someone did come through. It's not the salary range. I think that what it is for us is mm-hmm. just to give you some perspective. It's very reasonable to believe that if you work at Active Life in our brick and mortar, you're going to clear $100,000 a year mm-hmm. training people without having to make your own sales. Mm-hmm. And the floor is 50. Mm-hmm. So you're not running into this whole, you know, I'm not good at sales. I have to be there yeah. at 5 a.m. and then at 9 at night, that world doesn't exist. We're handling that. And we're responsible for the customer acquisition. So your pay mm-hmm. is going up as you get more and more education that we're giving you. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, starting at 50 on Long Island and then capping out in the mid six figure, like $100,000 to $200,000 in the middle there is pretty good mm-hmm. for what we're doing. So I mean, maybe I'm mistaken, but I don't think that's the barrier. I think the barrier for us mm-hmm. is the fact that, A, it's not a focus. Mm-hmm. And it's not a focus because it's one of those things where, for me, I want to bring the best person in all the time. And the appropriate response to that is, what if the best person is a person of color or is a minority of some sort or is from a disadvantaged community? You're not going to meet them unless you're looking for them. And that's a really good response that I don't have a response for.
And again, I think that gets back to our points one and two, mm-hmm. right? Which is you just have to be, you know, again, you have to build in your own Rooney Rule. You have to commit to it. Mm-hmm. And then those people will wind up in front of you, right? And then I think that the other, the you know, and then don't be afraid to take a chance, right? Like the worst thing that happens, right, is you hire somebody, they're horrible, you know, and mm-hmm. you lost like, you know, 2 months, right?
The salaries and the taking a chance are not the problems in active life. I'm a bit of a gunslinger, mm-hmm. which is, it's good and bad.
Yeah.
It's the being in front of the audience. That's what it is. And then part of it is also, frankly, from an employer perspective, I want to be fair to everybody on our team. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to lose the respect of people on our team where they're like, ah, he said he was going to hire the best black woman for the job, and he sure did. But now that that person may be the best person for the job. But because I said the best black woman for the job, she has an insurmountable hill to climb to prove that she's also the best person. Not just that I was looking for someone who looks a certain way and uses the bathroom a certain way.
I think, again, that's a really kind of hard idea. I think some people are willing to take that challenge, right?
Like, sure.
And should be given that opportunity, you know, and not for nothing. Like if, you know, and again, like not, you know, I'm the first Asian in my role at Men's Health, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think I've done a pretty good job.
But were they looking for an Asian, or were they looking for the best person and it was you?
I think they were looking because it was the era, I would say, like right before diversity became a large conversation, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, there was a chance taken on me, right? Mm-hmm. Because the previous guy before me, BJ Gador, right, was a trainer first, right, and had kind of like more trainer cred, right, in that world, right. Mm-hmm. I came from, you know, I had trainer background, but I came from the writing world, you mm-hmm. know. So they're taking a chance on a slightly different resume. Right?
Well, what I find fascinating about that thread is they probably didn't realize that through hiring you, mm-hmm. you were going to open them up to a whole world of different people who they probably never would have looked to hire or support.
Yeah.
And so now that, how does that end up benefiting Men's Health? Because let's think about this from a dollars and cents perspective. Mm-hmm. Other than a perceptive virtue signal to the world and being in New York City and saying, look what we're doing for these poor black people, mm-hmm. right? Which is not what it is. I'm just making it sound as bad as I possibly can. What does it do for the company's financial bottom line?
I can't tell the numbers, I think it just opens anytime you can. Go ahead.
I'm not asking specifically for them. What I'm thinking about is I'm sitting here as a young business owner. When I say young, I'm 40 years old, but I mean young business. And we are finally a profitable company, mm-hmm. right? I never took investment. We made a ton of money up front and then it was totally unsustainable. And then we used that money to build the company that is sustainable and it's working now. The thing I have to think about is we're still so fresh beyond the it's not working financial part, even if what we do works, that I'm like, how can I do this and have it make financial sense for the company?
Yeah.
Beyond just, I'm going to take a risk on a person because I want to do the right thing. How is it good for me financially? How is it good for any business owner to be thinking this way financially?
Yeah. And again, that's always the hard question. Right. And again, without knowing kind of your financials and your goals and stuff like that, what it does at a base level, I can talk about this a lot easier from the media perspective and from a brand perspective, right? Is when you showcase more varied demographics, right? It's giving you a chance to grow and broaden your audience, right? For the same, I think earlier in this conversation, at one point, you know, you said like, you kind of said, if you brought in like somebody of color, right, they don't necessarily work with those people or you know, I think it is like from our side, right? It is they have access and they have a drawing card to draw in like a more Asian audience, right? They already like men's health, women's health, whatever, right, already have the white male, the white audience covered, mm-hmm. right? Have always had that. That's kind of the legacy, right? So when, you know, we get more Asians, more Latin trainers, more Black trainers involved, right? People see themselves reflected in the magazine. Suddenly they realize the magazine is for them too, right? Whatever, magazine, website. Suddenly they realize the platform is for them too, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, that's how we grow our audience, right? The moment you've grown your audience, right, you've grown the ability to then sell to that audience too, right? Mm-hmm. So I would contend it's similar for you, right? Where if you brought in a trainer of color, right, who was awesome, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, again, the trick is always like the timetable, right? When you really see the return on it. And again, let's say we're putting them like in your chair on the podcast too, right? In social content, et cetera, right? That's going to eventually, like, that will create, hopefully open the door, right, for more clients of that audience or of that demographic to enter your building as well and to realize there might be something there. Maybe they want to work with that trainer, mm-hmm. right? Maybe they just want to get work. It creates that, right? I think there's another thing that happens too, and this is a little bit underrated, and this is kind of specific to our profession, right? So you and I think you're CSCS too, right?
No, I never did that. Okay. I went basic personal training certification. Okay. I'm allowed to do this now. Then I went to chiropractic school.
Okay. Either way, we're both kind of like badasses, right? In terms of
I'm definitely a badass.
Either way, we're kind of, you know, we both kind of, you know, it's like we have like a certain level of training knowledge. All the people who work for you have a certain level of training knowledge, yes. right? A lot of times I think we get it when it comes to training in particular, right? We tend to get trapped in the idea of like-minded people, right? Mm-hmm. Who approach training the same way, approach like the fitness discipline the same way. And again, there are reasons for that, right? That are often scientifically based, and there are reasons we have to do certain things, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes getting that other, even if it, like, again, I'm trying to look at things from like a worst case scenario for you, right? I'm trying to say like, we're going to get somebody in here who is diverse and they're going to like be out in 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. In those 3 months, like one of the underrated things that happens is that trainer, right, challenges all the people on your floor, you know, to maybe think, because let's say they come from like a boxing background, you know, mm-hmm. or let's say they come from like a Taekwondo background, right? They like quietly like challenge all your other trainers or teach them something, right? Like a mm-hmm. different approach, right? Even if, and again, very small stuff, like let's say it is somebody from like a Taekwondo background, right? And they wind up giving your team like a stretch that works amazing. I'm kind of, you know, making stuff sure. up here, but a stretch that works amazingly well for lower back pain. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they're out. Right. But you guys are then, you know, on this. That. Yeah. And maybe that like elevates you guys, you know, to like the ultimate back pain solving, studio out there. Sure. Right. And those are things that can't happen when I think sometimes we worry too much just across industries, right, in making sure that whoever comes on the team, right, fits, right? But there's a lot of virtue in bringing in the person that doesn't fit mm-hmm. and seeing what happens. Again, it's hard to quantify in terms of the financial stuff instantly, right? But there's a lot of virtue to that because I think it makes everybody better, even if it's not a long-term situation.
Right, I can see that. But you're just I also think there's a balance there yes. because I like the idea of everybody being a little bit uncomfortable.
Yes.
I don't like the idea of people walking on eggshells. And those are two different things. So yeah. for me, you know, it's one of my favorite questions to ask potential employees when I'm the one doing the interviewing, which isn't very often anymore, is who's your favorite comedian? Because if they don't have one, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if they have one and it's someone who's like dirty or whatever, you're like, oh, wow, I never saw that coming. I get a glimpse into that person in a way I otherwise wouldn't. And I'm one thing I am cautious of that I don't want diversity of is I want to avoid people who are looking for ways to be offended. Right? Because you have to have thick skin here. We're going to tell you the truth as far as we see it, as accurately as we know how to. Mm. And that's because we want to make you better and we want you to make us better.
Mm.
That's the only thing I'm not interested in bringing in. What you're talking about makes a lot of sense because it's like I go back to DJ again. Mm. You know, this is the DJ podcast today. he's a kettlebell guy.
Yeah.
We use kettlebells, but we don't have anybody who's a kettlebell person. And I don't want us to become a kettlebell business. But I can see the influence of the kettlebell trainer coming in and adding some things to the way that we do some stuff and changing the way that we do some stuff because that makes sense. And we don't have exposure to it right now. We don't have anyone who's great at it right now. And doing a weekend seminar with our team isn't going to change it. Right? Yeah. It's got to be cultural. They have to be in it, using it all the time. So I see that. And what you're describing there, to make sure I'm demonstrating my point, what you're describing there is that the financial ROI might be from just making the whole team better.
Yes.
And it might not be something you can tie directly back to that hire. But 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, the team is better because that person was on it.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you're making more money.
And not for nothing, too, what the financial ROI piece of it is, I think, the hard part, or is why a lot of the larger companies don't do diversity well, mm-hmm. right? Because there's so much, and for good reason, right? There's or for understandable reason, right? There's so much concern or uncertain because it's not quantifiable in terms of that financial ROI piece. That's why I think people are companies are sometimes a little bit, do I really want to do that? Do I want to spend all that time putting all that infrastructure in, you know, making sure I interview somebody, taking a chance on somebody when it may or may not really mm-hmm. tangibly make us more money, right? So that's one of the big challenges about diversity, period.
What I find interesting is you've mentioned take a chance a few times now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a misunderstanding of any employer who's going to hire anybody to believe that you're not taking a chance. Like it doesn't matter who you're hiring. I think it's just a level of one of the things I've had this. I enjoy these kinds of conversations because they're dangerous.
Mm.
I like that. One of the things that I've shared with some friends of mine is that one of the potential reasons why people of color, of minority communities, are not getting hired into executive level positions at big companies or even entry level positions at big companies is not because the person making the hire is racist and doesn't want to hire someone of color. It's because they're more comfortable hiring somebody who looks like them. And for whatever reason, they feel like it's less of a chance because I know where that person comes from because they look like me. When the reality is, that's not necessarily true at all. It's probably not true.
I think it's that, and I think it is the idea of, I think we delude ourselves often when we're thinking about hiring into something similar to what we just talked about, which is cultural fit, right? Mm-hmm. And it's weird because I think you see this reflected in the NFL too, and quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. For a long, long time, a quarterback had to be, forget color, right? A quarterback was going to be like a drop back passer, mm-hmm. right? Couldn't be anything else, right?
Right.
And then I can't even remember who Cunningham. What do you say?
Randall Cunningham would have been the one to break it.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I was thinking more modern. But
he was the one that got people thinking. That maybe Dante Culpepper.
Yeah.
Same team.
You get what I mean though, yes. Right? Like it took somebody again, like kind of taking a chance and being willing to step away from how everything is done all the mm-hmm. time.
So Mike Vick is the guy you're talking about then.
I think probably Mike Vick. I think it was like that era with like Vick and Culpepper. Remember Achilles Smith?
Yes.
Do you remember him? Yeah, that, I mean, he was like the failed one, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was like that whole era set the stage for what we have now, mm-hmm. right? So I think the problem or the challenge for a long time in the NFL was, well, the fit isn't right, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think we tend to, when we're hiring for roles, it's like we worry too much about cultural fit sometimes mm-hmm. instead of being willing to, again, I think I keep saying take a chance too, because I think fundamentally at least the way we perceive it, or the way any hiring person is going to perceive it, mm-hmm. is whether fair or not, right, is they're taking a chance, right? And so we have to get comfortable with taking that chance. You know, the same way, again, I can't, if I'm going to bring in 8 DJs, right, great mm-hmm. for strength and diversity, right? But I also, and the group that helps us select, right, need to get comfortable taking a chance.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Because what you're describing is he's an obvious. He's got the charisma. He's driven. He's intelligent. Good-looking guy. All of those things. There are people who are going to be more shy, more introverted, who are going to have a much harder time achieving some level of success, and you need to be able to put yourself in a situation where somebody like that comes through and achieves.
Yeah.
Because even if for nothing else, you have to learn how to help a person like that.
Yes.
And so you learning how to help a person like that is going to it's going to come up when someone who's already a high achiever at the company isn't high achieving on something that they're responsible for doing. And you learn something by helping this guy over here that you can now apply to this person over here.
Well, not just that, like if you go to your shy introverted example, right? Mm-hmm. So it's funny cause I'm a shy introvert, fun story. Mm-hmm. If you go to that, right, the shy introverted trainer who you bring in, right, who isn't DJ or comes through strength and diversity, right, if we can get them out of like that place where they're shy and introverted and freaked out about being on camera, right, mm-hmm. if we can get them out of that, then that trainer, the reality is, and God, DJ is going to love this podcast, but DJ is like...
If he listens.
we'll make sure that happens. Yeah. But... A trainer like DJ may not be the best person to work with a shy, introverted client, right? But that shy, introverted trainer who is no longer that, right, has a lot better chance of connecting with a different clientele than, you know, the trainer who's, like, got the perfect resume. So that's why I think there's so many just in general. I think it does go, like, it is all about taking a chance. Sometimes going against like when we're thinking, and I think we try to do this at Men's Health too. And like, you know, it's really easy to go get, you know, the big name writer, right? But sometimes you take a chance on a writer for a certain project because it just, and again, anytime you take a chance, 50-50 shot, right? Sometimes this winds up being a horrible edit for me and I'm like cursing myself out at midnight for 3 days in a row. I'm also not training during those days, which makes me really ornery, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting in a story I'm working on right now, I took a chance on a writer, right? And it's the best decision I ever made. But you can't get to the best decision you ever made unless you were willing to also acknowledge that there was a chance it was going to be the worst decision you ever made too.
Yeah, you have to go through some bad ones to get to the good one.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's one of the things I respect about you, and I guess by proxy, Men's Health, is that in a world where it's really easy to get a click, you're not chasing it that way. You need the clicks. It's your business model to get the clicks. But you're not looking for who has the biggest Instagram following. Let's just put them out there. Because that's cheap, that's easy, it's low substance, and not that much happens as a result of it. I respect the way that you guys are doing it and the way that you are leading it, in a sense that it's, you're looking for merit. You're taking chances, to borrow your phrase, on people who may be fruitful and who may not. And you're looking to add to the conversation. And I think that that's really cool. And I like to see that a leader in the industry like a Men's Health is doing that. And my hope is that more people will follow suit.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. Again, continuing to look for applicants for strength and diversity. Hopefully this helps make recruiting a little bit easier for me.
I hope so. If they're looking to come to you, they should come to me too. One of the things that we're aiming to do is, not aiming, one of the things that we are going to have by the second half of this year is a robust and consistent internship at our flagship business down the block. Mm. We have people who are scheduled to fly in to come and watch how we do business there. We have people who are scheduled to fly in to come be clients for 3 days and then go home, and we're going to do the rest remotely. I want all different kinds of people to come and experience that and to add to it. And so we want to have an internship program that has between 3 and 6 people full time for us, right? A morning crew and an afternoon crew who are there for 20 hours a week in the morning, and then another one there for 20 hours a week in the afternoon. The idea being, our next employee comes through that group. Why would we go looking out into the world when we got to know people for 3 to 6 months, 20 hours a week, and to develop them while they're there. And so people who are looking to come talk to you, I would love for them to come and talk to me too, even if they're the same, if they're doing both.
Yeah, no, we will work on it. But again, that's how it starts with conversations like this, mm-hmm. right? And then, yeah, it starts with that conversation and that relationship, and then it becomes a working relationship. And then hopefully we're both kind of making that awesome long-term difference.
Yeah. The critical thing that I hope people take from this conversation is that there's at least to me, there's a line of integrity that has to be walked. And that line of integrity is, I will not just hire somebody for the sake of saying, I have one now.
Yes. Right?
It's not about a numbers game of how many different color people are on the screen. You know, as I think about it now, we actually do have one Asian gentleman on the screen, Kaylin. Shout out to Kaylin, runs awesome. Our curriculum department. But so it has to be somebody who demonstrates some fiber of merit to have the role. And what you're describing is simply that if we want that, we have to make it a focus. If we want to at least, I'm not looking to hire a person of color. I'm looking to make sure that I'm not missing a person of color who would be amazing for our team. Does that make sense?
That's actually that's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate you helping me with that today.
Yeah.
Anything that you want to add for applicants who might want to look at strength and diversity this round? Because this comes out, like I said, a week from Monday. You're in your application process. Where do people go to make sure that if there's something they want to do or they want to send it to a friend, that they're sending this to a friend or doing it themselves to get involved?
Yeah, I would say, again, really easy. I'm really bad with the URL, but Men's Health, just do search for menshealth.com and strength and diversity. And the first link you get to will be our application. But what we would love, to be honest, is kind of what you described a little bit just now. It doesn't just have to be for you. Like, if you know somebody who's really good for it, if you're an experienced trainer and you know somebody who's great for it, tell them to apply for it. Because right. I think, you know, I would love 100 submissions, right? Because then I think we can choose the best group.
I'm curious. Do you tell people why they didn't get accepted?
To be honest, if they reach out to me, mm-hmm. I do, right? It's obviously very hard, like 100, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, 80 people, that's 70 different emails. Mm-hmm. The other thing I do too is, so if they reach out to me, I will always let them know. And then the other thing I try to do too with those who reach out to me, if they don't make the program, I definitely, obviously, you know, I try to do everything I can to help trainers of all colors, right? Mm-hmm. So, of all backgrounds. So, if they reach out to me, I try to keep in touch with them, keep them appraised of opportunities. I also tell people apply again, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, again, it's not me making the selection. So,
yep.
Yeah, in 2026, it might work out.
I had to try for the basketball team 3 times. 3 years in a row.
There's a joke in there about you being short, but I'm
not going to make it. Yeah, and Jewish. It's all there. I was just fitter than everybody, so I was able to play good defense. That's how I made the team. Ebenezer, thank you so much for coming on the show again.
It was a great time, and thank you for having me on to talk about this.
Yeah, turn pro. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Active Live Podcast. Please remember, give us a hand, rate it, review it wherever you listen to shows. We are on a mission to humanize the healthcare industry by professionalizing the fitness industry to empower the individual to live a life unlimited by the way that their body looks, feels, or performs. If you are inspired by that mission and want to jump on the wagon, find us anywhere. Active Life Professional on Instagram, Active Life RX on Instagram. Come to me personally at Dr. Sean Pastuch. We want to welcome you onto the train. We want you to be a part of the mission. We want to offer you the opportunity to pursue this right alongside us. We're inspired by your effort, and we hope to help you in your journey. Turn pro.